Welcome to the Goalie Hacks Podcast, the show dedicated to providing elite tips, hacks, and strategies to take your game to the next level, where we help you become an elite goaltender, one hack at a time. And now, here's your host, Mike Santaguida.
Bang, bang. What is up, everyone? What is up to all my goalies? And welcome back to the show. And I'm your host, Mike Santaguida, as always, and really excited to jump into this week's episode with an amazing guest, and that's Brian Eklund, who is a longtime goalie at the next level, playing for Brown University and drafted by the Tampa Bay Lightning, and then following that up with his NHL debut in 2005-06. And he's gone on the last 10 years, moved on to coaching both Harvard University and Boston University, both before moving on to a new opportunity this season with the New Jersey Devils organization as the development coach for the Binghamton Devils in the AHL. And Brian is just such an awesome guy, super down to earth, but just, you know, just gets it. And I know you guys are going to love this one as we dive into, you know, the do's and don'ts when you're trying to make a push, trying to make an NHL career push, and how more kids can make that transition to the next level much easier moving forward. And was just a pleasure to have Brian on, and thank you to the Devils organization for allowing him to participate in my show. And I'm really excited to dive into this week's episode. You guys aren't going to want to miss a bit, so make sure to stick around all the way to the end to catch all the details. There's lots there that I didn't mention. It was a great episode today. Thanks, Brian, for coming on. So without further ado, we have no ads this week, so let's jump right into this week's conversation. I know you're going to love the chat Brian and I had today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Goalie Hacks Podcast. And today on the show, I have another stellar guest lined up, and a former NCAA D1 and professional athlete and longtime D1 coaching veteran, now turned AHL development coach for the New Jersey Devils, Brian Eklund. And Brian spent his early years playing high school hockey in Massachusetts before moving on to play 4 years of Division I college hockey at Brown University. And after graduating and playing over 45 games in college, he then went pro in 2002, starting out in the American Hockey League, before finally getting his NHL debut for the Tampa Bay Lightning in 2005-06. And shortly after retiring, Brian went on to become a college coaching veteran, coaching several years at both Harvard University and Boston University. And as of recently, Brian has moved on to a new opportunity at the next level this season with the Binghamton Devils in the AHL. I'm super excited to dive into some goaltending development with him today. Coach Eklund, how you doing? Thanks for coming on the show, man.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me, Mike. You really... going through my resume there, it kind of made me feel really old in that moment. Jesus.
I feel like even me, I'm getting older, and you start rattling off some things. You're like, wow, the years just fly by, right? But I mean, amazing career, and great to get on a call here and going, and super grateful to have you on today. I know your schedule is obviously pretty busy, but shout out to Rob Liddell again with my crease for suggesting Brian as a guest. I was super pumped when, you finally responded, got back to me. We could finally connect. So welcome to the show. But how have things sort of been going in terms of development with your goaltenders, and what are some of the challenges you guys have had to overcome so far?
It's like all of us right now. I mean, the biggest obstacle this year has been COVID. Whether you be a mite or a squirt goalie that's just starting out, all the way up to pro goaltending. I mean, it's been a difficult year, and it's been a very mentally challenging year for a lot of guys. It hasn't been a normal feel to a season, but at the same time, I think there's been a lot of good development. I mean, I think there's been a lot of mental strengthening because of all of this. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's something at the end of the day, I think that we're going to look back at, and it's going to be one of those turning moments. But in general, things are going well. I mean, I can't complain. We're very lucky and blessed to be able to do what we do and get to do something that I love on a daily basis.
Yeah, well, right on, and I wish you guys the best of luck as you roll into the thick of spring here. But maybe you can just start off, by briefly sharing a bit of your story and how we got to where we are today.
Sure. No, I'm a local kid that grew up in Boston, Mass. Grew up there, played all my youth hockey growing up there, and led a very sheltered life. My parents took me to and from the rink every day, and I loved every minute of it. They weren't ever hockey players, but they gave me every opportunity to be one. Went on to Archbishop Williams High School. Archie's was a place that my entire family growing up went to high school, so it was all that I ever known. So going there was kind of like that dream. I remember when I was young, going to games and watching my uncles play, And it was the only place that I ever wanted to be. And I got very fortunate to go and was recruited to go to Brown University with Roger Grillo as the head coach. An amazing guy. He's an amazing teacher of the game. He's now high up with the ADM portion of USA Hockey. I still bump into him all the time out at USA events, and we sit down and we have some great conversations. And from there, I was lucky enough to be drafted by the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I mean, from that point forward, it was hard work, luck, and prosperity, I guess, at that point. Had some great mentors along the way as I kind of grew with the position, especially once I got to the NHL level, also at the college level. A guy named Tony Cerisi was my goalie coach at Brown. Was never an X's and O's guy, but he was just an amazing person and really taught me a lot about connecting with your students and your goaltenders and how important that really is in development. And then I ended up having Jeff Reese as my goalie coach once I hit Tampa. And he showed me the impact that you can make as a coach on an individual if you take the time and the effort and really put that caring into it, how much you can actually make a difference. And when I was finished playing, it was the reason why I wanted to get into coaching, because it honestly inspired me to want to be better. And from that point forward, he's been a great mentor for me over the years. From that point forward.
Yeah. Well, on that note, why don't we dive right into your coaching philosophy? And everybody loves kind of hearing this and everybody's different perspective. But, you know, what are some of the major areas you focus on with your goaltenders, and why do you believe in those concepts so much?
I mean, obviously, like fundamentals, you could go and rattle off fundamentals. You can rattle off how important skating is for every goalie. It is.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, it's something that every goalie needs to practice and become second nature to them. But I mean, when I look at how we coach, and like when I say we, I mean my coaches that I have with my company and myself, we grew up together as coaches. And it's something that I really believe in, trying to teach through repetition and getting goalies to be able to recall information and recall how they're supposed to react to situations through drills. And sometimes, and a big thing that I really believe in is you can't sit there and try to rattle off a drill over and over and over again, the same drill from the same spot. You need to create differences and changes within that in order for goalies to really connect.
Variability is probably like a good word to put in there, right?
Yeah, exactly. Variability within the drill itself. Whether it be you have a sliding drill where you're sliding back door, and then you know what? You randomly throw in that one rep where you step one step higher, and how does the goalie react? Just like teaching through that. Another great thing like that I try to empower our goalies with is try to become passionate about goaltending. You want to educate yourself in the position. I mean, I'm somebody that at the end of the day, I'm passionate. I love what I do. I mean, I could talk hockey. We could talk for 4 hours today. You really could. You're probably going to cut me off at some point.
But all the time in the world, buddy.
But I mean, it's something that I love to see our like the goalies that I work with to want to thirst for more, to watch hockey, to be a part of hockey, to learn from the peers that are around you and those type of things. And I think that like maybe the last thing that I really truly believe in is improving self-evaluation skills. I guess that's the word. And really try to hone in on how did you feel within a drill. And I mean, trust me, I'm not the guy that walks in and says, this is how you need to play hockey or play this position. It's a conversation about goaltending at the end of the day. And I want to hear what they feel and what they see and how they want to react to situations. And then it helps them almost become an evaluator of themselves. Like, hey, I did this right. I liked how that felt. I did this and this felt wrong. And they start learning how to evaluate what they're doing inside the net. So, I mean, I guess like me as a person and how I coach, those are probably the keys to how I coach at the end of the day.
Yeah. And just, you know, to touch on that third one a bit before we go back to the first one, but, you know, eventually the student becomes the teacher, right? We all get older and you kind of have to become like self-sufficient, knowing your identity and know what works within your identity, right?
No doubt. I mean, you are the teacher when you get in that game. I mean, it's one of the lonely parts of this position. At the end of the day, you are in the net by yourself. You're on an island. You're like a pitcher on a pitcher's mound, and it's you versus the shooter, you versus the puck throughout the rink, and you versus the situation that you're reading. And there isn't somebody that has an earpiece in your ear to whisper to you like how to play. You don't get to come to the bench and sit on the bench after you make a mistake. You're in there and you have to learn and you have to react and you have to make adjustments on the fly. And it's something that at the end of the day, you're trying to empower your goalies to be able to do those things and feel confident in making those decisions every day that you're on the ice.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe we can just go back to your first one there. You talked about teaching through repetition and adding in some variability. So maybe you can just take us through a bit, articulate a little bit of deeper context and kind of show people the process you go through in your mind and how you kind of work up to different, like, how do you start versus how do you end? How do you work up? How do you know when there's too much variability versus not enough? And maybe you can just detail that kind of repetition based, subconscious, you're basically building subconscious memory through that repetition stuff, right? So maybe you can just dive into
that. Absolutely. No, I mean, it's something that we did and we didn't really like think about it too much. It was something that, I mean, I remember that like the first days we'd come in with a theme, like today we're going to work on lateral release. And I'm just throwing something at the wall here for you. And we'd come out and we'd tell the goalies, all right, this is what we're working on today. This is why we're trying to accomplish it. And this is a situation that you could use it. And then what we would do is we would dump out pucks and we would dump them out. And we would tell the goalies, all right, get in the net and we're going to play hockey. All right. We would work them through how to use it. And then when we would get to the pucks, we wouldn't start there and try to micromanage it. We would dump pucks out in random spots and we would say, go. We'd start making passes as coaches between us and the shooters and ask the goalies to react and how they would naturally react. So like in variability, it became a major concept in everything that we did probably about 8 years ago. It still follows me now. I'm out here on the ice here in Newark and we're out here doing drills. And like just today, we ran a drill in which the goalies had a huge part in designing the drills today with me. We'd sit down as a group and we'd say, all right, what do we want to work on? How do you feel in this situation in this past game? And we would say, all right, why don't you sit here with me and we will start drawing up what we want to do. And then I said that I am going to throw an Easter egg into this. All right. I'm going to throw something in and we're going to throw a variability into it. All right. So that it isn't exactly how we drew it up. And I mean, I really do think at the end of the day that goalies and I mean, in coaching in general, at times we become too static. In that we want to do the same thing over and over again, but hockey isn't that way. It's micro transactions in your mind that you're making. I'm willing to cheat on this play a little bit in order to gain this over here. And it's all of those reads that you make throughout the course of a game that ends up being wins and losses. So it's like you want to work through those emotions and those mistakes and successes in a practice setting where you can control it and hit stop, be able to go over there and talk about it. Hey, take a look at what we look like in this situation, show it on video and then get back into the net and do it again. I really think that at the end of the day, it's one of the more important things that I want to bring to our lessons on a daily basis.
Yeah. So you're saying that you actually, a huge part of the variability is just dealing with the emotions that come with when things change and you didn't really expect it.
No doubt. I mean, it's
that's a good one.
I mean, it's you look at you're a goaltender just like I am. And I remember back when I was playing when I was in the net, you would sit there and you'd like draw up a drill or the coach would draw a drill and you would do it. And you'd look at all these dumb shooters like they went and they screwed up the drill or they changed it. But in reality, did they or were they helping us? I mean, they started cheating because you're making it hard on them and they want to score goals. You want to make saves, they want to score goals. It's that cat and mouse game that eventually the shooters were going to be like, you know what? I want to do something different. I want to win. I want to score a goal. And then how do you react in that moment because of the changes that they made? I mean, it's the way the game is played. You see it now and how the game is evolving. I mean, 2-3 years ago, RVH was a very prevalent thing and the players didn't know how to react to it.
Yeah.
It would come down and they would look at the goaltender already be down on his post, leaning into the post, and they wouldn't really understand. But now you sit there and watch and they're attacking us when we're in that position. They've changed their mindset of how they're approaching it. So because of that, we're now almost going backwards a little bit. Maybe now we're going to play on our feet more. Maybe now we're going to use VH a little bit more to, in order to throw a little variability into what we're doing. So, I mean, it's a big part of all of this. And I think it's a real, it's a give and take that you have over the course of a game and even within a practice.
And then diving into the second thing you mentioned is being passionate, you know, being passionate. And I think I kind of like interpret that as, you know, being passionate, becoming like really student of the game and just being so interested in, you know, how to evolve, how to grow, how to shave a couple inches off your game. Right. But why do you think it's so important for, you know, for all goaltenders of all ages to really become passionate about the position?
I mean, like, think about it. Like, why did you fall in love with the position when you first started playing? Why did you fall in love with it?
Oh, I love the glory, man.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, like, it's like everybody has that moment or that thing that kind of attaches you to the position.
Yeah.
Whether it be, like, just you're the adrenaline junkie in which, like, you're sitting there and looking up in the crowd and you want them to chant your name.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't happen for a player. It happens for you. And it's like you think about it and it's like everyone has that moment. And I think that when you're passionate about the position, when you're passionate about the players that play the position and at the highest level, all the way down to the lowest levels that are in the minors, and you want to learn and be imparted to all of their knowledge. Like, mm-hmm. you sit there and it's just like, not being passionate, I don't think that there's a possibility that you're going to make it to that level.
Yeah,
I think that it's really the passion that's going to drive you through the ups and the downs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because trust me, there's nothing like pressure when you turn and you start playing at the Division I level and the pro level. The pressures that are involved on a daily basis are intense. And you swing these emotional swings. And it's at the end of the day, it's that passion that you love what you do, that you love being a part of all of this stuff that really is going to drive you up that next level.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, you know, I mean, you said it, like, you know, we always say it on the show and obviously, you know, too, like, goaltending is such a marathon. It's not a sprint. Right. And, you know, if you're not passionate about the position, you will inevitably face challenges. You will inevitably face the lows. And if you're not passionate about what you do, and if you're not passionate about, you know, improving and stuff like that, then eventually you kind of fall behind, right?
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, like, every goalie is going to go through the lows. And I mean, it's just know it. I mean, if you're listening to this at the end of the day, like, you will have days that you feel like, you know what, I stunk.
Yeah.
I let my team down. Those days are going to be there, but there's also going to be the days on the other side of the rainbow where you're going to be like, you know what? Everything kind of clicked. And it's those emotional swings back and forth that is what drives, I think, a lot of people. Like, I mean, I know at the end of the day, I hated losing more than I loved winning. At the end of the game, when I lost, I was mortified. I felt like so down because I let people around me down, I felt. But when I won, I was a part of a team. I was just a part of it. So, I mean, it's just like those emotions of being a part of that locker room, that's, at the end of the day, what drove me to this position.
And then finally, you know, talking about, you know, kind of your third pillar that you mentioned is that improving self-evaluation. And there have been a number of guests on our show who actually bring that up, and I'm a big advocate of that as well. But how do you articulate that to your guys and for guys who maybe don't self-evaluate very well? You know, how do you kind of teach them? What's your process? I guess a better question.
I mean, it's a difficult one. It's something that a few years ago I was kind of tinkering around with things, and I came across Google Forms, and I actually created a Google form. And at the end of the day, like, I would send them after the game, I would send them this form, this link, and ask them, hey, can you fill this in? Like, and the questions were simple. They were like, who's filling this out? How did you rate yourself 1 to 5? What did you feel that you did well today? What did you feel like that you needed to improve?
Yeah.
And what did you do outside of playing hockey today that you think might have affected that?
Yeah.
The one thing with college hockey, there is so much that's going on a daily basis for all of these kids, whether it be they had a paper or a midterm that was due the night before and they had to stay up in order to cram to get it done, or they had a big test, or you know what, you broke up with your girlfriend, or you know what, like they only serving chicken fingers at the mess hall at the end of the day. Like it's right. There's so many things that went into it that I needed to kind of dive into how these kids were doing. And so I put it out there to them, and it was amazing the responses that I was getting back. And it was also very eye opening to see the wild swings between, you know what, I felt I played really well or I played really poorly. There was no in between. It was either a five or a one back and forth. And it was one of those things that I was like, you know what, this is we're watching the emotional roller coaster right here and these things that I'm being sent back. So it made me stop and think like, hey, like maybe it isn't so much the goaltending side. It's now dealing with how they're evaluating themselves and getting themselves to calm themselves down and understand this is part of the process. So we ended up sitting down and having more like personal talks of like how things are going and talking through a lot of the concepts that they were bringing up in their forms. And it amazed me what a difference it made over the course of a year of just sitting there and diving into their lives and what's going on in their days and how much of a difference that made. But that self-evaluation skill is really where the emotional roller coaster starts from. And having it dialed into really how you like played and having it close to how your coaches perceive it is really healthy at the end of the day. That if the coach comes up to you, how do you feel you played? And you say, I felt like I played great. And the coach turns and looks at you like, I thought you played terrible. That's a really tough conversation to have in that moment. So it's something that when you bring that closer to the median, it really ends up making a big difference. So it's something that I now start with our youngest goaltenders. We start asking them for how they felt that they did, or what did they do leading up to yesterday's game? What was the results that you got? What can you change? Like we start small and then we kind of build up to actually, how do you feel you played? And we'll sit there and pull clips of NHL goalies and we'll play the game of, was it a good goal or a bad goal? All right, and go back and forth. Like, what could the goalie have done different? And trying to get them to understand, like, hey, it's okay that goalies make mistakes, and it's okay that you make mistakes. You don't have to have that defensive guard up when you make a mistake.
Right.
No one's judging you. So it just became like this real mental exercise. And by far, I am not a mental expert. I am not. I have no background in it. I've just lived goaltending long enough to realize it is a very mental position, and I try to help kids deal with it as best I can.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so much. I mean, you know, you know, I'm 5'7" on a good day. Clearly, I didn't make it, you know, to pro hockey because of my size, right? So, you know, that thing between your ears is a lot more powerful than I think a lot of kids think, right? And you know, kind of just veering off a bit from, you mentioned something regarding all the different layers that go into like your life and, you know, as you get older and in college, right, all these different layers, and even in pro hockey, managing so many things just like even away from the rink. So, you know, what's some advice that you have to kids for like distractions or really keeping everything kind of between the glass is kind of a way I like to put it, you know, like and keeping everything away from hockey outside of the rink. What's some advice you have for them?
It's a great question. You know, the one thing that I've been we've been dabbling with a little bit is concentration grids. We've been dabbling with it in order to try to improve our focal time. Like how long can we focus on the task at hand? And I mean, it's something that's simple that anybody can go and put in a Google search for and put in concentration grid. And you'll end up seeing it. And it's a bunch of numbers that are laid out in a grid form. There's apps that are on your phone for it as well. But I mean, it's something that we've used because, I mean, you combat this even at the pro level, where you essentially need to focus for almost like an 8 or 9 minute period of time, because you have the TV timeouts and then like the people, they come out with their shovels and they're up and down the ice 35 times and then you're back into your net and you got to refocus and get back at it. So it's something that we were like, you know what, we want to create something, an environment where you need to focus for a solid 8 minutes straight. All right. How quickly can you keep your mind at, how many times did you feel like your mind's like kind of moved away from what you were doing? And I mean, at the end of the day, it's still a work in progress, but it is something that we're using. It's a tool we're using right now. So, I mean, trying to think of something that I can impart on this podcast for you and for your listeners. It's something that we're using even at the pro level that you can easily Google, and maybe that you'll find results from it as well.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. And I honestly just know, you talk about self-awareness, and like when I was younger, I remember, you know, I'd go to the rink and like I had like a flip phone, you know what I mean? Like I barely even had like the phone barely even like worked, and like I would turn it off and I wouldn't touch it when I got to the rink. And then I just noticed, like, as I got older and got to college, used the phone more and like got to pro. And then I kind of just noticed like my focus, you know, would like wane like way sooner, you know? And then, I started to, what's that?
Oh God. Yeah. I mean, like right now I'm like that dog in Op, like you hear squirrel and your head snaps. I mean, there's no doubt everyone's attention span has dropped drastically.
Yeah. And so the reason I bring it up is because I just noticed in my career as I got older that my attention, and maybe it's from an age thing too, but I also think it's also because of the phones and everything, you know, we're instant gratification constantly. Right. And there's science that's actually come out now that says, We have a shorter attention span than a goldfish now. 7 seconds is our attention span. So something
is that what it is?
Yeah. It's crazy, wow. Right? So something that I've been actually with some of my guys, I've been telling them to do these C-grids. Like, hey, I think deliberately practicing your focus is something that is not talked about enough in this day and age, especially with all the technology and the social media and everything like that. Because I mean, I grew up with, like, I was born in 93, so I saw it all kind of come to life. I was old enough to know what it was like without that stuff, right?
Yeah.
And then I, as I got older, like, now I'm like, man, it's crazy. Like, even when I kind of have conversations now, I need to, like, catch myself because I'm like, oh, my God. Like, so, you know, on what you're saying with the C-grids, yeah, like, I really think that, you know, it's something that's really gone overlooked considering how our behavior has changed significantly. And we really got to be a little more focused on deliberately practicing our focus, right?
No doubt. I mean, and it's something that takes time. It takes effort. And I mean, it seems like such a small thing, and it's not like a tangible thing you can put your hands on. Yeah. Like working at your butterfly or your power push or whatever it may be that you want to work at.
Yeah.
But it is such an integral part to the game, the mental side of the game. Once you get up to the levels that I'm coaching at right now, you sit there and there's just such a fine line that separates goalies that make it, that are $8 million goalies, and that are back down into the minors. Yeah. There's such a fine line at the end of the day. And one of the things that you can put your finger on, it's the mental side of it and how they deal with a lot of those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we'll dive into some of that stuff later, but I kind of want to,
sure.
You know, I just want to go through your time playing at the next level for, you know, for so long, and you made the transition to Division I college hockey, you know, from playing high school hockey in Mass in 1998. But for you at the time going from high school hockey to college, and then being able to jump in for a good chunk of the schedule that season, your first season as a freshman, you know, where'd you typically struggle the most right away?
Oh God, I was 6'5", all right. But I was probably 165 pounds.
Right.
I was a kid at the end of the day. I was an 18-year-old kid. I just turned 18. And jumping in there, and I was the youngest on that team at Brown, I think, for all the way until my junior year. I was a baby, and I just remember like getting in there, and there was 21-year-old freshmen that were with me.
Yeah.
And it just didn't blow. It blew my mind how physically immature I was at the time.
Mm.
And I hadn't gone through years of lifting. My body was behind. So like some things that I remember, like challenges that I had, I remember going from a 15-minute period in high school hockey to a 20-minute period,
right,
and how much harder that was on your body. And at the end of the game, the rehydration and right, being able to get your body back to getting back on the ice, it was a huge challenge of making that adjustment up to that level. So, I mean, there's no doubt that the physical conditioning, the strength part of my game was lacking and was behind, and I needed to play a lot of catch up.
Yeah. And then I guess regarding like your entire college career, you know, What's probably the biggest thing you learned in terms of development during your time there? Was it just the physicality side of things or something else?
I mean, like I go back to like the goalie coach that I had there, Tony Cerisi. He was an amazing mentor for me at the end of the day as a human being. There are good days and there are bad days. I had amazing goalie partners, all right, that I had there. My goalie partner, my junior and senior year was Jan Denis. He went on to play pro hockey and played up at the NHL. He actually backed up Marty Brodeur here in New Jersey for an entire year. I mean, just an amazing goaltender. Yeah. And he actually beat me out my senior year. And I mean, the things that I learned over that time were really just like moments from Tony of dealing with, you know what, some days are going to be good days, some days are going to be bad days. Just the laughs that he would make me have on a daily basis coming to the rink and how much I loved being there and seeing him. But like those are the things that I look at now. Those are the moments that I remember more than anything. Like I remember like Jan was one of my best friends on the team. And when he ended up beating me out for my senior year and started taking more and more minutes, I mean, he went on to be an All-American that year.
Yeah.
He deserved it. At the same time, I was dealing with that. That's my friend and all the successes that he was having. And at the same time, I'm watching what I felt like my career was about to end.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there and you're feeling that tug and pull both directions. And I mean, it was tough. I mean, college hockey is hard because there's only so many games that can be played. Yeah. And you look at how college is played and you typically have your starting goalie and he runs with it. So, I mean, there's no doubt about it. It's just college hockey is hard. It really is hard. It's hard to make it there. It's hard to survive there. And it's hard to move on from there. I mean, it just really is. It's a great, passionate level of hockey, but it is hard.
Yeah. And so I kind of like how you mentioned that there because, you know, I mean, you mentioned the schedule. I went through a similar thing too, right? And I think that this is kind of a good lesson for just a lot of kids, you know, any goalies listening is that, you know, the goaltending position is getting deeper and deeper every single year, right? You know, we're getting more and more competition. So, you know, it's something that I had to deal with when I went to college too, was like learning to not play sometimes. Right.
Yeah.
Learning how to, you know, sit on the bench and not play every game like that. So maybe for some kids, you know, that aren't getting the minutes they want or, you know, are in a position like that, even in college where they're not playing, you know, how did you kind of get through that and get past that? And what was sort of your mindset through that all?
I mean, it was hard. I mean, when you grow up in youth hockey, I mean, especially nowadays, I can't even imagine. But when you grow up in youth hockey, you're used to playing every other game or like there's almost a pattern to how everything happens. You get to high school. And when I was in high school, I played every day. So, I mean, I never learned how to be the backup at the end of the day. I mean, I had amazing goalie partners when I was going through youth hockey. I mean, Mike Ayres, who's now the associate head coach of Boston College, he was my goalie partner. He was an All-American at UNH growing up from when I was a young kid. And I mean, we always had competition, but he would play a game, I would play a game. And it was hard. I mean, it like you sit there and you look at that first time when you're sitting on the bench for 3, 4, 5 straight games and you're looking around, it's like how. And I think those are the moments that like Tony Cerisi really made a big difference. He guided me down that path of this is how you should be approaching this. Don't take this as a negative. You want to take this as an opportunity to better yourself. How can you get better? Don't look at it as somebody's trying to screw you, all right, as much as this is an opportunity. How can I look at myself and what areas do I need to improve in order to move forward? So, like, it really was a huge mindset change. And, I mean, he'd get out there on the ice and we'd work together and we would do things after practice. And it created that internal, like, fight within myself to want to better myself and to be honest with myself. Like, hey, you know what? I think I'm a great goalie. Everybody thinks they're a great goalie. Everyone has that internal confidence in themselves. Mm-hmm. But like when you actually get in there, it's like, how do I know that I need to get better? And how do you finally come to an ease with that? And he was a huge part of that, of me learning that moment that really carried from that point forward in my career. Cause the same thing happened to me at the pro level.
Yeah. And then following your time in college, you know, you made the transition to the ECHL and the AHL right away. But for you personally, what was probably the most surprising part about, you know, like the level of hockey or the lifestyle that was sort of the most difficult to get adjusted when you got to pro hockey?
Oh man. I mean, number one, I was surprised that I got a contract to say the least. I mean, I looked at like Jan was amazing, but I only played a handful of games my senior year.
Yeah.
I was very lucky and fortunate at that point that Tampa did not have a lot of depth in their organization and they were going to throw a flyer at a 6'5" guy. I mean, I'll be honest, I was very lucky. But once I got there, I mean, I was floored by the amount of downtime and free time that you have as an athlete.
Away from the rink, right? Yeah.
Oh my God. Like you're as a college athlete, or even when you're playing high school and you have mom and dad that are around you, or you're with a billet, it's like college, you have like homework you got to go to, you got to go to class, and you just think about the hours. It does. You sit there and you add up all those hours and that and what that all filled. And then you go and you turn to pro hockey and you're in the rink. All right. An hour and a half, 2 hours before practice, you have a meeting an hour before, you're on the ice, you do a goalie skate for 20, 30 minutes. Then you have your practice. It's only 30, 35 minutes long. Mm-hmm. You stay on, maybe take a couple extra shots. And next thing you know, you look up and it's 11 o'clock in the morning and you're done for the day.
Yeah.
Or you go and you get a workout and you're done at noon. And it's like, what do we do with the rest of the day? And
you gotta learn how to handle your own autonomy, right?
Exactly. Like you, and you know what? Like everybody goes through it. You're gonna have bouts of not dealing with it well, and you end up spending more time on video games or whatever it may be, and that you really want to do. And it's like you need to again self-evaluate and how can I use this time better? And I mean, really, at the end of the day, once you're at that level, that pro level, you're one, two steps away from playing on TV, your dream for your entire life.
Yeah,
you're
sure.
Two steps away from actually being able to achieve that. How bad do you really want it? Are you willing to do the extra? Are you willing to take down those hours that you were doing other things and actually put that towards a positive forward motion for yourself? Mm-hmm. So like there's no doubt like that there's an awful lot of time that you never had before that all of a sudden is dropped in your lap and it's now dealing with that positively, constructively.
Yeah. And I noticed kind of over my time that, you know, playing pro, that the guys that you really use that time to their advantage, like, and the guys that kind of just like, oh, we're done for the day, let's go home and play some Fortnite all day, right? And you really kind of see that difference in terms of from a performance standpoint on the ice from the guys that, you know, they're accountable, right? And
there's no doubt.
Yeah, accountable in everything they do. And I think college kind of prepared me for that, which was nice. But there was a part of it when I got to pro, I was like, oh my gosh, I don't have to do all of these things now, where you kind of like, you're like, oh, it feels good. But then you're like, you know what, you need those things to compete at that level. You have to do. And I mean, maybe it's a little bit different, right? Because I was a short guy, right? But I think that at that level in general, the guys that really go far at the pro level, maybe you can touch a little more on is the guys that really pay attention to those details longer, more often, right?
There's no, and you know what? I mean, it goes to the mental side of it as well. You're dead on. It's being a slave to that process.
Yeah.
Knowing what your game plan is and how do you become effective and then become a slave to that process. And I mean, you essentially, when you turn pro, like the rhythm of the day becomes like your internal clock. Like it becomes a part of what you do. So you want all these positive things to be a part of it, whether it be the yogas and the meditation time, whatever you can that floats your boat to put into your day. You need that to have that rhythm. And I can tell you that looking around a pro locker room, there are kids that have already adapted and have that, and they're very mature in their process already at a young age.
Yeah.
And there's other guys that take longer and they need help to be able to find their process and to find that. But I mean, that's what veterans are there for, and that's what coaches are there for, to try to help develop and help push and help them through a lot of these different things. There's no doubt. I mean, you definitely hit the nail on the head with this.
Yeah, no, I like how you said that though, that some kids are mature in their process just from a younger age, right?
There,
you know, and I think ultimately, kind of like in a nutshell, is, you know, all of minor hockey that you play is realistically you're preparing all your processes that are, work for your identity. So that way, when you get to the NHL level, you're not like, okay, what do I do today before the game? What do I do pregame? What do I do when I get on the ice? Right.
No doubt. I mean, it's like you're stretching, your pregame routine, the music you like to listen to. What do you like to eat the day before a game? How do you feel the day of? The amount of hydration that you go through, like all of that stuff, it starts at the youth hockey level. And I mean, there are going to be tweaks along the way. I mean, like there was actually, if you Google it, there's a great video on like All Caps. It's the All Caps Network, and it's about Braden Holtby and his process. You can Google it, and it's on there, just his process that he goes through on a daily basis. And you just see how intrinsic and how mentally challenging that must be. But at the same time, you sit there and you realize that how long it must have come for him to find and make this a part of his daily process, and know that starts back at the youth level of picking up little things, how you tape your stick, things like that. It just, you don't think about it on a daily basis, but it is part of what you do every day that makes a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And then diving into, after a few years later, you made your NHL debut for the Tampa Bay Lightning, which is an amazing accomplishment. But, you know, when you got to the NHL, obviously NHL, best league in the world, right? But what was the hardest part? You know, you talk about you kind of had to make that transition to pro, and then you learned. But then when you became, more of a veteran at the minor levels and then made that jump to the NHL, like what really stuck out to you is the hardest part about making that jump to the NHL level?
The pressure. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, it's just the pressure to perform. When you're playing youth hockey, it's like at the end of the day, you still get the red slushy after the game, all right? Because you played good and mom and dad love you, all right? When you get to college hockey, there is that onus on you want to win. But at the end of the day, you're still working towards becoming a better athlete. And the coaches realize that they're working with you and they're trying to develop you. In the minors, it's the same thing. Mistakes happen. And they understand that. And we're going to work through mistakes. We're not going to crucify you for every mistake you make. But when you get to the NHL level, now now the rubber hits the road, all right, so to speak. I mean, it's like you've got to be able to hit on all cylinders and all of these processes in order to be able to survive and to stay and to stick. And it's one thing to make it. It's another thing to stick. And I made it, but I didn't stick. And it's something that I look back at. And it was actually, I mean, when I wrote up my business plan to start my little goalie school, I actually put there as the credo is, I want to help a kid make it further than I made it. All right. One day that was what I wanted to do. I wanted to make a difference, to be able to help one kid be able to make it further than I did. I mean, I've been very lucky in that I have already at this point, but I mean, it's something that there's no doubt. I mean, it is a difficult level to play at, and the pressures are one of the major parts of it.
Yeah. So, you know, just a personal question, I guess, if you feel comfortable, but if you could go back, I guess, and maybe change one thing, you know, you say you think about it, and what do you think would have been maybe the differentiating factor of helping you stick at the NHL level?
I mean, it's going to that downtime. I mean, I could have used my downtime a lot better. I could have got myself into better shape and taken care of my body better. At the end of the day, become more flexible in doing those things. When you sit there and you see how good that these guys are, like Nikolai Habibulin and Johnny Graham were the two goalies that were ahead of me at the time when I was in Tampa's organization. And you sit there and you watch them and how good they really are, and their puck handling, and they get on the ice and they work extra hard, and it just like it drives you to want to do it. But then it's like, what else can you do? If they're already working that hard and now you have to work hard just to work as hard as them, how am I going to pass them if I'm only working as hard as them? I need to work even harder. What else could I have done? And I mean, I think that's the biggest part that I look back at, that I could have been more focused away from the rink on achieving my dream. And it's something that, I mean, it does bite me. It's still to this day, I look back at how I was, and it's like, you know what? I still wasn't mature enough for the opportunities that I was given at that time. I needed to be more mature with it at the end of the day. And now, I mean, now that I'm 40 years old, I look back at it and it's like, it kicks you in the butt, but it's part of what drives me now as a coach is to help these kids to understand how important this is and how close you really are to making it.
Yeah. And then maybe you can just touch on, you know, obviously like game time anxiety, pressure, you know, it's tough, right? You go up levels more and more and the systems and kind of knowing your identity is even more important as you go higher, right? So, but for you in terms of your guys, like, you know, how do you articulate that and help them, you know, manage the emotions better, manage the pressure much better? What do you tell them to focus on more?
I mean, it's that whole focusing that we were talking about earlier with the concentration grids and things. I mean, it's taking your mind and focusing on one common task for 8 minute stretches. Can you focus on that and not let your mind wander to think about the pressures? Because that's really, it's those moments that are in between whistles or at the beginning of a game where all of a sudden the pressures and the butterflies come into your stomach and then that drives you down a path. And can you get your mind to be able to, when it starts to wander, to get it back to center in order to be able to do what you do? And I mean, you sit there and you watch goalies like Peter Mrazek. He's out there with a smile on his face. He's loving life. He doesn't have a care in the world, it seems like, when he's in the net, because he's just so confident in what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And that comes with time. And I get it. He's been in the NHL for years. And all the young young goalies that are listening to this right now, it's your opportunity will come. But at the same time, you need to learn to just focus on what's important. And it's you versus the puck. It's you versus the situation. It's not you versus the players. I mean, I just remember when I was younger, I mean, when I was first signed a contract, I remember looking around the locker room and there was Vinny LeCavalier and St. Louis and all these people around me. And I'm like, what am I doing here? Like, how did I get to this point? And I was in like kind of like an awestruck moment. Exactly. And I'm just like, how did I get to this point? And you're walking outside and people are asking for your autograph. And you're like, well, who am I? Like, how did this happen? And it was like kind of that shock to the whole system. Yeah. But I think that in those moments, that's where your mind is wandering and it's not focused on what you need it to be. Mm. And I think that it's a learned thing that starts at the young levels and dealing with the pressures when you play youth hockey. I mean, all you young guys, I mean, I'm sure you get nervous when you play a big game or you go up against a player that you know it's a really good player and you get nervous about that fact. And those little experiences that you're going to have over time are what helps you cope long term with even at the older levels that you know that you can accomplish what you want to accomplish.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I guess diving into your long coaching tenure at the Division I college level, the last 7 years working with both Harvard University and Boston University, you know, two top programs in the whole country. But, you know, where do you know, you talked about your kind of experience from a play standpoint in terms of that physicality stuff. But, you know, for you from a coaching standpoint, like where did you typically see like goalies struggle the most when they're trying to make that transition either from minor hockey or juniors to college typically?
I was very fortunate over those years to work with some very talented kids. Whether it be at Harvard with Steve Mikulik and Merrick Madsen and Michael Lackey, like they're very talented young guys. And at Harvard, we had the Ashton Ables, we had Jake Ottinger, Drew Camessos, we had the Connell LeCouvets, the Max Prodzics, like they're really, really talented young men that were driven. And the thing that I can say that when you get to that level, everyone that's at that level has had a lot of success coming into that level. There's a reason why they're there. They're not there just by luck. They're there because they earned the right to be there.
Yeah.
And they fought in order to be in that spot. So everyone once you get to that level, it is ultra confident what they are. And it's typically that first roadblock that you're going to hit in your hockey career. For a lot of these guys, it's that first roadblock that they hit where they might not have the success that they want. And that is a difficult thing. Especially for a young goalie. Steve was probably 19 when we started working with Steve at Harvard. Merrick Madsen.
I played against him at prep school, actually.
Yeah. I mean, great goalie. Yeah, and you look at Merrick was 19, I believe, when he first got there to Harvard. Jake Ottinger came in as a 17-year-old. I mean, he actually accelerated and came in a year earlier. And it's like, they're all physically, like you look at them now, and I look at myself when I played, it's not the same sport. I mean, physically, they're in 10 times better shape than I ever was when I played. And they're just different animals when they walk through the door. Even as a 17-year-old, they're more physically mature than any of these, than ever I was when I was growing up. So it's not so much a physical thing. A lot of it is dealing with those expectations and learning how to read plays at a faster pace. So the game is faster now once you go up that next rung of the ladder. The game gets a little faster and things happen quicker. It's not so much that they shoot the puck harder, but they collect the puck a little bit quicker and they move it to the next spot a little bit quicker. The players are a little bit taller, so it's harder to see around the screens and things like that. So like it's dealing with that and then trying to get those goalies to process at the pace they need to process at in order to be able to play and be successful at that level.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you kind of develop that? Is it just, it takes experience at the level kind of thing?
It takes a little bit. I mean, but there's no doubt you can definitely do that in practice. And
how would you do
through
that?
Drills, we would set up a lot of different game situation drills, competition drills. So we did one, like just a simple one. It was a 3-on-0 drill. We'd have two nets facing each other across the zone. We'd line up three pucks in the middle and it would be a 3-on-0. They're allowed to get the next puck once they score the first puck. And in a 3-on-0, you kind of go no holds bar. So like instantly the goalies are in a competitive mode, but they have to start learning to read. Yeah, they're in battle mode right off the bat. And they have to read, all right, is he a lefty or a righty? All right. Is the guy that's carrying the puck down the middle, is he a lefty, righty? All right. Once it's coming down to the flank, when can I cheat a play? When can I not? And it's through those successes and failures within practice. This is just one minor example. It's through those successes and failures that they start learning what they can get away with and how fast they need to play the game. And you can do that in small areas within drills where you set up two players in tight. We did a lot of drills. We'd flip the nets around backwards and they would face towards the end wall. And I mean, obviously you feel like you need a flak jacket as a coach at the time and pucks are flying around everywhere. But I mean, it's one of those things where you sit there and you ask them to compete and to process and read plays and passes that are happening quicker than they have been and not allowing them the extra moment to recover and get back to there. And they have to then make sure they're hitting their posts on their recoveries. It's something that it takes time. There is an experience part to it, but there's no doubt you can definitely work at it and improve it.
Yeah, no, I like that a lot. And then for young goalies at home, you know, aspiring to potentially play Division I hockey someday, you know, what's some advice you have or what are some big things that like you look for in goaltenders during the recruiting process that you think they should be working on today to you know, be ready to make that transition or help them stand out more when they play?
The stand out when you play, that's a tough one. I mean, obviously results matter. And when you get up to the Division I level, it's a result-oriented time. Yeah. And I mean, every coach has their certain checklist that they're like, you know what, this is what I like to see in goalies. But at the same time, it's very arbitrary, a lot of the things. It's not so much like you need to be 6'3 in order to be an effective goalie. It's not true. You were a very effective goalie at 5'7. You were more effective than I was at 6'5, right? at the end of the day. So, I mean, when you look at it, there isn't that intangible, like size wise that you're looking for, but the things that you're looking for is that competitiveness, right? The ability to fight through a screen and track pucks through screens, get your hands on it. How sticky are you to the puck? Does the puck hit you and explode off you, or does it hit you and stick to you? How well do you rotate your hips? I mean, that's a big thing. Like these are the major check boxes that I always are looking at for goalies. So after a save or on an opportunity after you make a save, how fluid are your hips to be able to get back in, on the correct line and get square to the puck again? Like those are like the technical skills that Like we talked about way at the beginning, those are all technical skills that there's no doubt that they're pillars to your game that you need to practice over and over and over again. And I mean, something that you can work on right now that's going to make a big difference once you do make it to that level, it's your coachability. It's your ability to take what a coach is trying to get to work with you on and apply it as quickly as possible. And that ability to be coached is something that there's no doubt it takes time to get there. And I can say, listen to your coaches, get as many voices as you can over time. Listen to different coaches, different opinions. There isn't one way to play that's better than another way to play. You turn on the TV tonight and you're going to see 60 different goalies that have 60 different styles that are playing hockey tonight. And it's finding what it is for you and through that coachability. So, yeah. I mean, that's a long-winded answer, I think, for what you were looking for.
No, it's a great answer. And you hit on some of those things. You know, people like to hear some of the things, right? Like you mentioned, competitiveness, being able to fight through screens. It's actually something that's both of those themes have come up very frequently lately, and we've dove into them a lot, so we won't in this episode, but you know, really good to kind of just for some clarity for everybody watching, is just like reoccurring theme of competitiveness, reoccurring theme of being able to fight through traffic at the next level, right? Because guys, just they know that if you see the puck, there's a good chance that you're probably going to stop it, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's, what do they say? Clear-sighted shots now are almost at 97% save percentage right now.
So I mean, it's like, you have the numbers out.
Oh, there might be internally hidden, but I mean, I believe that's pretty accurate. Wow. That it's that if you can see the puck, it's 97% is being stopped. Wow. So I mean, when you think of it that way, it's their goal is to take away your eyes or be a flash screen or to hide the release as long as they can on you. And that's where the Royal Road and these slot line plays have become important, because it's changing your focus and where you're looking at, and all of those things. So it's, there's no doubt, like it's being able to fight through traffic. And I mean, at the Division I level, you're going to have bigger players than you ever saw play at the high school level. And then once you get to the pro level, they're bigger than even the Division I players. And they just seem like they never stop growing. And at the NHL level, it's amazing how difficult it is to find pucks. And you sit there and you laugh at times. I mean, I'm sure, because I'm a coach and I have our goalies that are right all the time. And they're like, hey, did you see that game last night? Why did the goalie go and slide on that shot that went to from the point that went to the short side? Why did he slide? It took him out of the net. And like you're right. And it's just, he couldn't see the puck. So he was doing his best to get as much of his body in front of the puck. Right. And it's just that fight, and that's how difficult that level is at the end of the day. I mean, it's just no doubt fighting through traffic is a major thing.
Yeah. And I like how you brought up this idea of clear-sighted shots. You know, when I remember, and just I'll share a little stories. I remember when I was trying to, you know, when I bring up the story often, how I got overlooked in the OHL draft, and then I was a little sour. And then I remember I went out for tryouts in the spring and I got lit up, and I was like, all of a sudden it woke me up. I was like, you know what? Maybe I wasn't as good as I thought. Maybe I need to get a lot better. And then I remember going into the fall, I played midget and I practiced with my junior team. Like as an affiliate player, my dad drove me an hour. We'd go 2-3 times a week. But a big thing that he focused on with me when I was young was like, hey, he's like, once you can stop the straight up, we call them straight up shots, right? Now they're clear sighted shots, right? But he was like, once you can stop the straight up shots, then they'll play you in a game, right? And I think a lot of goalies out there, you know, they focus on how that breakdown happened. How is this guy getting his clear sighted shot? Oh, this D did this. This guy did this. This winger wasn't there. This guy isn't this. You just told me 97% that we're supposed to be stopping straight up shots. So that was something he articulated to me a long time ago. That honestly, you know, he was like, you gotta stop all the straight up shots, and they can only beat you on rebounds and tips and screens. And even then, you know, you want to be battling. So, you know, and the reason I share that is because, one, we haven't really touched on it much, but two, I know that that's what a lot of coaches at the next level want to see. Are you just getting beat up when it's a 1v1, you versus shooter, are you getting beat, or are you getting beat on screens and tips and second opportunities and stuff like that, right?
it's making the shooter earn it. Yeah. It's at the end of the day, you have to cover 24 square feet behind you. And can you do it efficiently? It doesn't matter if you're 5'7 or 6'5. You can be very effective in covering that space. If you know your angles, your depth, how square you are to the puck, you can cover it as well as anybody. So, I mean, at the end of the day, it's being the best goalie you can be in that situation and reading the play the right way and getting your eyes on the puck as long as you possibly can to see the release of the puck. And then after you see the release, it is very rare that you're going to be able to see it directly the entire way into you. So it's one of those things that you fight as hard as you can to see the puck come off the stick. And then in that moment, that snapshot that you saw, you have to be able to then process where the puck is going. And that's where the upper level processing really pops in.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I guess, you know, we can kind of move into your role with the New Jersey Devils organization in the American League now. As the development coach for the Binghamton Devils, obviously been a weird year. We mentioned it earlier in the conversation, but you know, for all younger goalies trying to make that jump to pro hockey this year, that you've been working with, or the development goalies that are still a little too young, like within your organization, like where do you typically see them struggle the most when you're working with them? Like the guys who are still in major junior or whoever, even the Euros that come over, right, for development stuff.
That's a tough one. I mean, these kids, like the kids that are being drafted and that are part of organizations these days, they're all talented kids. Yeah. And I think that more than anything, it's them learning their process and what makes them effective as a goalie. Because as you're growing and you're getting older, I mean, a lot of these kids are drafted at 18, 19 years old. They still aren't the finished product. All right. They're not done growing. I mean, there was somebody that told me that between your 17 year and your 18 year, that most goalies grow an inch, or most players in general, hockey players, that there's an inch of growth in most players. So it's like you look at over the course of that year, how much kids are still growing, they're maturing, they're getting stronger and all that stuff. So they still don't know what they're going to be as a goalie. They're right now, a lot of them are puck stoppers. And it's starting to really hone that in and creating a game plan for that goalie that makes them the most effective goalie they can be. And then as they continue to develop and get stronger and more athletic and they read plays better, it changes how they can play. Before, maybe you're working more on ice recoveries because they inevitably didn't read the play as well and they end up sliding around a little bit more. So in order to be effective, you're working more on ice recoveries. But as they start reading the play better, they start beating things more on their feet and you have to do less of it. You're changing what you're developing. So, I mean, it's the one thing that's really cool that I have found over the course of this year is you have guys within the organization that are at all different spectrums of where they are with their process and that they're very different internally of what makes them effective. It isn't like a carbon copy of each other where they're just stamping out goalies that this is our organization, this is what they look like. It's working with them within their process in order to become the best goalie they can. And I mean, I can say that every one of them are very individual. And that some of them are working on reading plays better. Some are working on depth and squareness issues, and like some stuff that you would be like, hey, like how can he still be working on that? No, like you work on that every day of your life as a goaltender. Like you're going to be working on that to the day you retire on being that. So I mean, there are things like that will creep into a guy's game, and then you're like, hey, I got to run over there. We're going to fix that over there, and then something else springs open. So it's one of those things that I can say there is never ending work. There's always something you can be doing. There's always something that we can be improving on. And it's more than anything, it's just that relationship that you build with the goalie, that they trust that what you're doing is for their best interest. And that all these things that we're going to work are going to eventually be packaged into one of the best goalies that they could possibly be.
Yeah. And then for kids at home, I guess, looking to, you know, pursue an NHL career someday, or a successful pro career at the next level. Obviously everybody wants the silver bullet, right? Like what is it? But it, you know, I mean, and obviously there's so many different layers, like, I mean, you can't even articulate them all in a single conversation even, right? But, you know, what do you think is maybe one of the most important underlying characteristics, you know, young kids need to develop the most throughout their careers to prepare them for the challenges that lie ahead of them at the NHL level?
Wow. Great question. I would say an open-mindedness, and the ability to be coached is a huge thing. But I mean, really at the end of it, it's just the passion. I mean, it really is. And I know it sounds cliche, and a lot of kids love the game, and they really feel that they love the game. But do you really, at the end of the day, like, how passionate are you? Are you willing to do more than the person beside you? Mm-hmm. Are you willing to, right now you're listening to this awesome podcast and you're trying to like pick up one little thing, and I'm not sure if I've given you that one little thing or if I've just spent an hour of your time sitting there talking about craziness. But at the end of the day, like, there are other people that you're competing with for that same spot that are out there doing something. You're doing this right now, which is awesome, but can you continually motivate yourself to be better than them? And I think that is something that it's important to understand. Like, there are 60 Division I starting goalies, all right, at the college level. Mm-hmm. There are probably about 90 scholarships that are used. Are you one of the best 90 goalies in the seven age groups around you, the three before you and the four after you? All right. Are you one of the best 90 goalies in the world in order to get one of those scholarships or to be one of those starting goalies? And if you're not right now, if you don't feel you are, what can you do in order to become that? And I think that is that big internal question that every kid should have burning inside them. What more can I do?
Yeah. And the way I like to kind of articulate that too is, well, first of all, if you talk to any elite goalie at the next level, they're never actually done learning. They're always adapting. They're always learning, right?
Like even us coaches, we're never done learning. Like, we're constantly educating ourselves. Like, you sit there and you break down film of other teams' goalies and how are they trying to be effective and how are they trying to attack plays? Would that be effective for us? And then you sit and you have a conversation with a goalie and you start talking to them about what they see and what they feel inside that net. And you start like piecing together different ideas. A majority of who I am as a coach right now is because of those conversations. So there's no doubt that those are the things that will drive all of these goalies to become better.
Yeah. Yeah. And then in terms of, finally here, and in terms of helping goalies get an edge, what's probably the biggest like hack that you've implemented with your goalies over the years, either like a drill or an exercise or a concept that, you notice typically helps goalies excel and find success and transition to the next level much easier?
A drill. This is
everybody's
a good
one. Got some hacks, right? That's what the people love. They come here, right?
there's no doubt. Play games. All right, not like games of hockey, but within what you're doing, set up little mini games for yourself. Compete within drills. Within practice. Like, try to set up like parameters for yourself that you are going to hold yourself accountable to. I think those are the things that you can do within any practice or within any drill that can challenge you. Like, do you want to play a drill, but you know what, or this drill that we're going to play, I am not going to slide in this drill. I'm not going to do it. All right. Set up that parameter and then try to hold yourself accountable to it. Can I force myself to play on my feet longer? All right. Wow. Or you know what, on a different drill, maybe I'm going to play a majority of this drill on my knees. All right. It's all going to be around the net stuff. Can I go and try to use my posts more effectively and pushing off them and stuff like that? So, I mean, it could be a little something that you can take to your practices.
No, I love that. I love that. Making it competitive. I mean, it literally comes up in almost every podcast we have that being competitive is pretty much non-negotiable. Having that competitiveness at the next level is pretty much non-negotiable. And I've actually unknowingly kind of taken that approach in practice where you like really take pride in every goal, every shot that you get throughout your entire career, every single day you get on the ice, right? You just take it one at a time for 20 years, right?
Absolutely. Hopefully longer than that.
Well, it's an arbitrary number. I mean, I've been playing for 24 years, but you know, it's the same thing, right? But but Coach Eklund, do you have any last words of advice for everyone listening that you feel passionate about sharing?
No, have fun, guys. I mean, it's a wild ride, and there's going to be great days and there's going to be tough days, but understand that everyone's gone through it, and that's what makes you part of the goalie union.
Yeah. Absolutely. Unreal episode. And coach, thank you so much for coming on the show. Really was a pleasure to have you on it, and really excited for you with your new opportunity with New Jersey, and love bringing on guys that, you know, just have, you know, both played and coached at the next level. And I know today we'll just, you know, shed a ton of light for everyone listening, what it really takes to, you know, to make that jump to the NHL level. So can you just let everybody know where they can get in touch with you online?
Sure. I mean, you can always reach out to me on my website, MassCrease, or Brian@MassCrease.com. You can always reach out to me, and I try to get back to everybody as quickly as I possibly can.
So go check out AHL goalie coach Brian Eklund with the Binghamton Devils in New Jersey Devils organization. All the links will be available in the show notes for people to check out. If you want to connect with Brian or his team, and he's had tons of success both coaching and playing at the next level for over 20 years now. And he's had the opportunity to work with and teach some of the best goalies in the world and be a part of some amazing programs. So maybe somewhere down the road, we'll have you back on the show, man, if that's something that interests you.
Anytime, man. I love talking hockey, and I can't believe that we were able to fit it in under 5 hours.
Hey, you know what? Maybe we'll come on for an EP2 or something like that. No, but we got all the time in the world, and you're an amazing guy, man. You do amazing things, and I know everybody is you know, really going to enjoy this one. So I'm really grateful for you coming on. Good luck as we roll through the spring here. Take care, stay safe, and we'll chat soon, man.
Thanks a lot, man, and stay safe yourself. Talk to you soon.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode, guys. If you like what you heard today, make sure to hit that subscribe button, as we have tons of amazing guests lined up ready to come onto the show in the next few months. And make sure to tune in next week, and every Tuesday from now on at 8 a.m. is next week, have another awesome active pro goaltender coming on the show, Beck Warm, who's currently playing up with the Carolina Hurricanes on their taxi squad in the NHL, and has actually been stellar this year, and can't wait to welcome him to the program as our next guest. We dive deep into his whole career, his secrets that have helped him get to the next level, and all the adversities had to overcome along the way to get to the NHL and find success. And Beck is an amazing dude, and really, really grateful for him to make some time for us in the program here, and I'm really excited for you guys to hear this one, so make sure to tune back next week. Without further ado, here are the giveaway details for our monthly giveaway we do for the Goalie Hacks podcast. And just as a note here, if you enter into this giveaway, even if you don't win, we select 4 winners a month, and that includes books, different products, training products, NeuroTracker subscriptions. We give away all sorts of things. We pick 4 people a month. And even if you don't win 1 month, you're always entered into the future giveaway. So to enter the giveaway, if you're an Apple user, simply go to the Apple Podcast app on your phone and leave us a written review and rating. And if you're an Android user, you can also download iTunes onto your computer and leave a review and rating on there as well. And once you leave a review of the podcast, just take a screenshot of it and either email it to goaliehacks@gmail.com or DM me on Instagram with your screenshot and your full name. Get excited, guys. Great things ahead. I hope you guys enjoyed today's show, and I'll see you next week.